So here's a little bit background of what I will be talking about. First, semantic web and linked data is here, some background of that. I understood that some people here at least, and now I see that more than half have a humanist background, so some non-technical stuff is needed as well. And this will be not be a very technical presentation in general, because I was asked to keep it sort of applicable to people that are not technically oriented necessarily. Then the vision behind our work, I will be mostly concentrating on our own efforts in Finland during the last 10 or more years on these issues. And the vision is that we need a content infrastructure for doing these things. And then some practice, because we are aiming at tools for humanist researchers to do work easier and better than before, and also to the general public that's interested in things like history or cultural heritage in general. Here's a small picture of what this is about. In my linked data, and the semantic web is about ontologies, metadata, and data. And this is the RDF symbol, that's the data model used on the semantic web for modeling all this stuff. And we have had two major projects or a series of projects for FinOnto, starting from 2003, and then Linked Data Finland starting from two years ago and going on at the moment. And they together cover most of the things on the semantic web. So what's semantic web? It all started, or it didn't actually start in 2001, but the major initiative in the world was started then after Tim Berners-Lee and Jim Hendren and Roa Lassila. Our graduate actually wrote this seminal paper on Scientific American about the semantic web. Actually, the web in the first place should have been semantic. That was Tim Berners-Lee's vision in the beginning, but then it came very, very human-centered ordinary web, as we can see today. But the idea of semantic web, it's actually as old as the idea of web. And it was the original idea, pretty much, to have a semantic web. So what is it about? This one picture tells it all. Actually, the web that we humans are using is called Web of Pages, www, World Wide Web. And then inside of the web, there's now beginning to emerge GGG, as Tim Berners-Lee puts it, giant global graph. So this is the web of data, the semantic web, that's somewhere there inside of the web. And that is a web of data in the sense that it associates data with each other, so that, for example, that this table is in Oxford, that's one piece of the data, or that Santa Claus lives in Finland, that's another piece of data. And on the web page side, then you might have some web pages about of Oxford University or Santa Claus or Christmas time things as well. So the idea is that here the web is linked by the hyperlink, so that you click one page link and you get to another page. But here you cannot really click on the semantic web because it's data, but it's based on the associations that then are used for creating the ordinary web of pages. Here's an example that we did to our health, National Health Institute. On the www side, you can see this kind of documents, web of documents about using spectacles in your work by one health organization in Finland. So there's nothing special there. But then inside of the web page, actually it's already embedded even on this web page, you can see metadata that tells the machines what this page is about. So this is GGG representation of this web page here. And if you look at more closely, you can see that here is the web address of the page. And then we have metadata, that's TTL, is the agent, the organization that created the page. And it's a publication, it's written in Finnish, it's text HTML type, and so on. This kind of, it was issued and modified during these days. And then you have a content description here. Dublin Core subject is spectacles, working conditions, working online, web page, and so on. So in this way, now the machine can understand, at least to some extent, what the page is about. Because this representation here doesn't tell the machine much about the page. It's, the machine only sees the HTML page and it can render it for us to see. But it cannot process the contents. And if the machine doesn't understand the content of the web pages, then it's very difficult to make intelligent applications. If the guy who is actually processing the data doesn't understand what it's doing. And that's the idea of the semantic web. We put explicit data representations there aside the web pages, and after that the machines get more intelligent. So this work has been going on in the international level for a long time now, and now many of you have seen this linked over data cloud, and the latest statistics is that it has the core set of it consists of over 1,000 different data sets, 60 billion triples. So it's a huge amount of data. And it consists of different data sets. For example, DBpedia here, this is all versions of Wikipedia extracted into a graph, into a semantic web. It's 320 million triples. GeoNames is a geogazetteer of 9 million different places on Earth. And all these lines that connect to these data sets, these are data sets now, not pieces of data, but data sets. They tell, for example, this line between these two data sets tells that the Oxford page or information about Oxford University in DBpedia, whether it matches with the notion of Oxford in GeoNames. Well, it shouldn't, but the Oxford city here should have a counterpart in GeoNames, telling where Oxford is and so on. So this is a very, very interesting development, and this is now going on and has been going on for about 10 years already now. So it's not new. And the big boys are there also. So in the GGG business, Google has this knowledge graph. So it's already embedded in the heart of the search engines, the knowledge graph, which is based exactly on this kind of technology. And Microsoft has Satori, which is a Buddhist word meaning enlightenment, which is very appropriate at this moment and at this project especially. So this is happening whether we like it or not. So, next question is, why do we need semantic web actually? And I tried to boil it down into a few points. First point, intelligent search. What does it mean? If you have this kind of metadata from a museum, this comes from actually from our national museum, telling that this is a cup and plate made of porcelain, and it was created in Germany, and in Meissen was the factory. We have lots of these kind of databases. It's now represented in XML here. And then if we ask questions to this kind of database, find all vessels, it cannot find this, because there's nothing said here that it is a vessel. It's a cup and plate. Find all ceramic products. No hits again. This is porcelain. Right. Find artifacts manufactured in Europe. Again, no hits, because this is manufactured in Germany. Does the city of Meissen manufacture ceramics? Yes, true, because there's Meissen, but it's a wrong answer, of course, because Meissen is a city and a factory, and in this case, of course, the city didn't make the porcelain. So how can this problem, very simple, basic questions, how can they be solved? It's by using ontologies like this. Here I have exactly the same data in terms of RDF, using the turtle notation, but for each metadata field, I have added a reference to an ontology. So, for example, when I refer to cup and plate, I have the string for human readers here as well, but then I also tell the machine that, okay, this is a cup and this is a plate. And if you look here, the metadata representation here, you can see that this item is connected to cup and plate. And cup and plates are kind of vessels that are included in the object. In the same way, in the material ontology, we have the literal porcelain, and we have the material concept porcelain. And again, you can see here that porcelain is part of the material ontology here. And And meissen here, you have actually two meissens here. You have the actor meissen, which is the factory, and then you have meissen, which is part of the geo-ontology. So meissen is part of Germany, that's part of Europe here. So rather making this kind of references, it's now possible to answer correctly to all these questions. Find all vessels. Okay, vessel is here. This is a vessel. Find ceramic products. Ceramic, I know about ceramics, and porcelain is kind of ceramic. And does the city myself manufacture ceramics? Now we cannot know. We don't really know because the cataloging has not been precise enough. But we can at least tell that, do you mean myself the city or myself the factory? And we can provide better answer. It's not only this kind of basic sort of query expansion that can be provided, but also quite novel ways of searching things. For example, here's a question from our system where we can find connections between people. So here I ask the question, how is Akseli Gallen-Gallela, a famous Finnish artist, related to Napoleon I? And the system automatically finds a path from Napoleon to this Akseli Gallen-Gallela, the painter. So for example, here Gallen-Gallela is the student of Becker, his teacher was Bernson and so on, and here's Anger, who was patronized by Napoleon. So this kind of new ways of finding things, the search is not anymore only documents, but for example connections or whatever you like. More abstract notions of information that you can search for. The second challenge, multilinguality. As we know, for example, Piotr Tchaikovsky has in Ulan or in Wikipedia, it has different kinds of languages used. And all these forms of writing Piotr Tchaikovsky are quite correct. But of course, if you try now to search for Piotr Tchaikovsky, what language should you use? It's very difficult to say because they are quite different from here. And how then the semantic of social problem, the idea is to be neutral in terms of language. Everything is indexed in terms of the URIs, the identifiers of the things. So the semantic concepts is used for indexing and storing. And all these different language tags, they are just something that hang around there. And it's very easy to make these kind of systems, they're multilingual by just switching what language you would like to use. And then the system automatically will use the labels that you use there. But for example, if you're indexing some musical data, which using ordinary techniques, which language would you use there? Very difficult. In Europe, there are more than 20 languages at least spoken in EU countries. It doesn't make any sense to select any language because there are so many languages, and then using the language neutral identifiers is the right way to go, I think. It doesn't solve all the problems, of course, but it's definitely a good way to approach the problem. Challenge 3, content heterogeneity and linking. In cultural heritage especially, we have the problem that everything in different times is there. What you can imagine, for example, this guy from which we have a biography lived in this house, wrote this book, and perhaps even painted. The painting was inspired by this piece of music and was mentioned in encyclopedia, Wikipedia, sat on this stool, and there may be maps and videos and what kind of things. And all this stuff is related, it's very heterogeneous in form and also in content. But it's still linked to each other, these pieces of knowledge, in very interesting ways. I will show how to approach this problem in a while. And then the distributed content production, for example, in this cultures of knowledge case, there are lots of organizations that produce data using different ways. So we may have linked data sources, archives, land survey, Google photographing us, museums, archives, libraries, Wikipedias, medias, you name it, citizens as well. And everybody, the strength of web is very much based on this, that everybody can contribute without considering too much about the others. Only if you use the standards like HTML. And things like that, then you are done and you can publish your data. But the problem is that if everybody is free to do whatever they like, then if you try to aggregate the information or knowledge, then you're in trouble because everybody has really used his or her rights to the full extent. So how can we solve this problem and the content heterogeneity problem at the same time? Here's the picture that, that we sort of try to depict what we have been doing. And the idea is that we must have some kind of ontology infrastructure network here of concepts. And then if everybody here on the outer skirt is contributing to this system written in red here by using these concepts and then these URIs or identifiers for content descriptions, then automatically, if I put this book here, it's connected to whatever here might be also connected through the network. Or if I take a picture and say that it's taken in Oxford, then it's automatically connected to whatever here is also related to Oxford. So the idea is that this is a kind of business model where it makes sense for everybody to contribute in this business, because if I give my data to the community here, then my data gets enriched by the other data here, because somebody might have also something there related to my stuff. And at the same time, my data, of course, enriches everybody else's data here. So it's good for everybody, and I think this is a sustainable model because of this, because everybody should be happy in promoting this procedure. So here's an example then the culture sample system that's online in this address, if you like to try it. It has been alive actually since 2008, and I'm a bit embarrassed that I'm still talking about it. But it seems that it's still good to talk about it. So here's how it works in practice, if you would like to do it. So in this case, we have nearly 30 different organizations, museums and archives and libraries and web sources. And then we wanted to put everything in culture together, whatever you can imagine, like poetry or music or whatever there is. And then the problem was how can we make it aggregate the knowledge and harmonize it together. And here's an example how it's done. Here's a biography center that collects information about people. So we have here a relational database of Axel Galileo, the painter, who was born in this place, and Gustav Mannerheim, a marshal, born in another place in Finland. So this kind of relational databases can be easily translated into RDF form, these kind of semantic graphs. So we have these two persons, this is the type, is a person, and here you see the name and profession and birthplace of this person. In the same way, in art museum, we might find a painting about made by Axel Galvingala, the painter, about Mannerheim, the marshal. So this kind of information that we get from our National Gallery can be represented like this network. This is tells that Axel Galvingala painted picture about Gustav Mannerheim. And again, mechanical translation from the relational database. And then our national survey tells us that Lemu and Askainen, two places in Finland, are part of another part of Finland, a county in Finland, that's part of Finland, Suomi here. So this is geo-information that comes from the Finnish Land Survey Authority. And then, in our case, we developed these ontologies that where everything is presented in a kind of hierarchical way. So we have here some physical objects, places, professions, artists, and so on. So this is a huge ontology of tens of thousands of concepts taken from different sources. And then the magic happens like this. This color tells from which organization the different data comes from. And now if you put these graphs together, it's basically one line of code. You make the union of these triples. And everything works nice, but I will come to that later. There are issues, of course, involved there. But the idea is that the graphs are very, very flexible. If you try to merge tables, the relational tables that people have been using for decades, it would be very difficult to come up with what kind of table would it be that would tell you everything about the world. But in the RDF data model, it's very flexible and very easy to make this kind of union graphs by just merging the graphs together. and then we are in the world of GGG. And here you also see a very important aspect of I actually learned it from here, because I started to make this example by just because these two guys are very famous, and I sort of have been familiar with them, and then only after I made this picture I realized that Lemu and Askainen, these two places, birthplaces of these gentlemen, they are actually part of the same part of Finland. And this might be an explanation why actually Kallen-Kallela was chosen by this marshal as a kind of court painter. They might have met there at the same place. And so this was a kind of knowledge discovery for me. And this was truly a knowledge discovery, because I didn't think of this before I saw this whole picture. So the aggregated knowledge is often more than any sum of the than the different data sets together separately. So, and based on this kind of graph, then there are standard ways of publishing the data. I will show you a little bit more about that. But it's very, very nice to make a different kind of application. And we made culture sample on top of this kind of millions of triples store with 9 different perspectives to the same data. And here the important thing is that once you get the data right into RDF store, it's very easy to make different kinds of applications on top of that knowledge without touching the data. Because the data has millions or even tens of millions of pieces of information there. If you have to touch the data to make an application, that's very expensive. But if you can reuse the data that's once there by just writing applications, then it's very effective. So I won't go in details here, but just to show you some ideas. It's multilingual, 3 languages, even if the whole data is in Finnish. Because some of the ontologies are in English and Swedish. So we can partly at least support different languages. And then we can have these kind of things like putting things on map, and not only putting on maps, but we can also color code here in what way is the thing related to this place. What is the semantic relation? For example, a painting might be about a place. Then we can have historical maps on top of current maps, historical places here, so you can find the real historical places that you are dealing with. And here, for example, this area was annexed by the Soviets, so all the names are changed in the Google Maps. You won't find any Finnish anymore there, but by layering a historical map on top of Google Maps, you can find the old places. Here's the idea of relational search, and here are some event-based views where we can actually have a semantic process describing the traditional leather booth making here, so that we can have this kind of dynamic video viewer, and while you watch the video, depending on where you are, there are semantic recommendations that change online in real time, depending on what's happening here. So all kinds of new interesting stuff can be developed on top of that. Here's the semantic Kalevala, it's our national epic that we translated into RDF. So there are over 60 different versions, translations of Kalevala available. You might even have one, because Tolkien was inspired by Kalevala. And you can look at these different parts here, and automatically the system links them to art, for example, that was inspired or related to the persons or mythical persons that are mentioned here in the poem here. So it took 1 year for a folklorist to annotate the thing, but it's now done, so it's nice. All kinds of things can be put on top of rich semantical. That's also the idea of showing these examples. So the vision that we have here is that we need this semantic infrastructure. I think I skipped, this is too much text. But basically what I try to say here is that there are two problems that we have to address when we want to make data sets, heterogeneous data sets, aligned with each other. And first one is that when we use the concepts in different data sets, we must refer to the same concepts. Otherwise, when we do the union, everything will be mixed. So for example, here is the same picture, and I have put a black ring on every concept that is used in more than two different datasets. So if these concepts are not aligned with each other, there will be a semantic confusion when we make the connection. For example, this place, Lemu, here, which is a village in Finland, it actually also means smell in Finnish. So if this concept gets mixed up with the concept of some smell, then you can imagine that the semantic system is not very, very nice to use. So as you can see, quite a few of these concepts are actually shared. And that's actually where the power comes from. It's based on these shared concepts that the datasets are linked to each other. And that's why it's very important that we can align them. And the solution there is to have ontologies taken from the same shared pool of ontologies, so that when people describe paintings or when they describe books, they use the same concepts. And if it's done so, then everything goes well in terms of data value alignment. So this is the same as links used in the linked data cloud. Then the next problem, the other problem, is that we also have to align the metadata models that we use there. And there are two basic approaches there. There's a Dublin-Gorfan approach where aligning which means that aligning the metadata fields or properties are aligned into subproperty of hierarchies in RDF schema, which makes it possible to say that for example, the creator of this object can be matched with the author of this book or the painter of this painting, because we know that author is a subproperty of creator. So in this way, we can also try to start to map the properties, not only the data values as we do here. And then another approach is to use SIDOC-CRM. I call it here SIDOC-CRM kind of approach, because the idea there is that we have some kind of foundational ontological model of the world, and then we translate everything into that model. And since we're using everybody has a mapping from his own metadata model to that underlying rich semantic model, then we can align the data based on that unit shared ontological scheme. So these are the main approaches that you can use there. And in culture sample, for example, we used this one, and now we also actually used this one in an earlier version of culture sample. But now in some new systems we are using this one, trying another approach. They both have their virtues and problems, so depending on the case. So the thesis that we have here is to have a content infrastructure for interoperability that's especially useful for cross-domain applications like the ones we talked about and the collaborative web 2.0 applications where lots of data is produced by public, for example. So it's like other infrastructures that we have had. The previous generations have made this kind of railroad and electricity infrastructures, but we are now dealing with some kind of abstract infrastructure that facilitates flow of information or knowledge on the web. Our motto was taken from Albert Einstein, our beloved friend, who told that or thinks that intellectuals solve problems, geniuses prevent them. And this is exactly what these infrastructures are good for. If you can prevent some interoperability problems in the future by making good infrastructure so that the data alignment problems are already solved by using, for example, shared ontologies, then it's much more efficient way of working, and you will save lots of money as well and effort. We had quite a few projects here, and quite large ones actually. Actually, over 50 different organizations in Finland have participated in these projects and building the infrastructure and applications. I won't go in details here, but it's sort of really, really was and has been a kind of national initiative, which is possible in small countries, by the way, and probably not in big countries like US. Because in Finland, everybody can speak very easily with each other. So what kind of infrastructure are we needing then? In order to prevent these interoperability problems, we need shared ontologies so that the data alignment problem is solved. Then we need also sharing of metadata schemas and also data, of course. That if somebody produces a useful data set, it would be very nice for me to use it in my applications and vice versa. So there are several things to be done in the infrastructure. First, ontologies. Major ontologies that need there are general concept ontologies like AAT of Getting Foundation, actor ontologies, so these are the authority files in libraries, place ontologies, key ontologies, time has to be represented somehow, and this is very important, event ontologies that enumerate or tell different events, for example, what happened in the Great War, or what happened in your life, what kind of events you were born and you will be dead. Two major events. And then there are lots of domain nomenclatures, very large ontology kind of things or terminologies like medicines or chemical compounds. And what I refer to domain ontologies is anything like this. I skip this one. Here's an example of why this isn't not necessarily easy to make this kind of ontologies. If you take the ordinary thesaurus, where you have this broader than and narrower relationships, you cannot really use them for reasoning unless you correct them. For example, this is an example that we had a thesaurus telling that makeup mirrors are mirrors, right? This is correct. Mirrors are, the broader term is furniture, again, right? And then if we are searching for furniture, we end up in our result set having makeup mirrors, because mirrors are more narrow and makeup mirrors are more narrow than mirrors. So something goes wrong here, even if in this simple place. So this instance ship is not transitive in this case. So what we did, we took several major Finnish thesauri and we transformed them into ontologies so that they would not behave like this here. But we could really make the subclass of hierarchies out of the ontologies. So here's an example again, I won't go into detail, but you can see here, this is from the thesaurus of the Finnish National Library about the university system in Finland, and here you see the broader term is written like this, and on this side you can see that actually it's completely wrong in terms of subclass of relations. If you interpret the broader term as a subclass of, you're completely wrong. But you have to separate these relationships into subclass of relationships and part of relationships in this case. What we then did was to collect all these different thesauri that we created into ontology into a linked open ontology cloud, where we have a big general Finnish ontology here, and then different more narrower ontologies here. So Upways is agroforestry ontology, this is museum ontology, this is applied arts ontology, this is photographing here. So the idea is that we align these ontologies based on this very large general ontology into a hierarchy, and then what the end user finally sees is a kind of one ontology only called COCO. But it's based on different sub-ontologies, so to say, that are maintained and was developed by different communities that know better their own area. So at the moment there are 15 different ontologies here, from defense to linguistics to photography, seafaring, public government, and so on, whatever, you name it. And all these things were already in use, but we translated them into ontologies from a standard thesauri using very simple techniques, but we had to do it by hand because of these complicated semantic distinctions. So there were only more than 86,000 different concepts altogether in this thesauri. And if you have ever seen ontologies in work, now you have. Actor this, this is a very, very tough, and this could be addressed in the cost effect that, that Howard was mentioning. There's linguistic variation, pseudonames, honorary names, name changes in time, and different names are used in different communities. So, so this is a mess, as all librarians know. But we try to adapt it now in this cost project again. Again, yeah. There are some good resources that, that to start with, like Getty, Yulan, registry that we have been using, that, and that will be open by the end of this year, or beginning of next year, actually. And we have some systems for them, as already done. Here's an example of perhaps I saw this online, because it's sort of an application of what kind of things can be then done with these personal information. Can you see anything? I hope it didn't drop me out from the network. Okay. Okay, sorry.
Can you help with that?
No, well, I have the password somewhere, but it's perhaps too complicated. Yeah, it helped me out. But I can tell it here, out of here. Now I cannot demonstrate anything. But. Okay, but what you can see here is here we have actually 6,300 biographies, short biographies taken from the Finnish Literature Society. And then we have harvested the stories and created 160,000 different events from their life, like being born, being awarded by a award, or getting married, or things like that. That you can find in biographies, this kind of events. And then every guy is represented as a series of events. For example, this guy was born in 1408, and then comes different events in his life. And then you can see these events on the map here. And this is a really interactive map, so that when you move here, you can see where this thing happened. And then you can see them also here in timeline, which is also interactive. You go here, you will see where he was active. And in this way, you can make a very easily present not only the events that this guy had in his life, but also the spatiotemporal dimension of how his life went on. And then this line of events is enriched from several different other data sources. For example, we have a history, an ontology of Finnish history. So if this guy ever participated in an event of the Finnish history, then you will find the Finnish history event here. Or if he wrote a book that was published by the Gutenberg Project, then you will find this writing event and a link to the Gutenberg Project's original text of his as a link. So we can enrich the life story by using the events, and that's the whole point. The events are very, very fundamental in representing knowledge and the idea of representing one's life in terms of events is very flexible, so that you can enrich it from different sources. For example, if there's a painting in a national gallery that he was painting, he painted, then we can enrich his life story with a painting event and a pointer to the painting in the museum. Place ontologies, again here I cannot demonstrate it, I don't have even time, but it has 800,000 Finnish contemporary places. And you here you see that in this area there are Pyhäjärvi, the name of a lake. You have 10 or more Pyhäjärvi lakes, even if in this area of Finland. So the problem is that these place names are very ambiguous, and of course historical names are even more so. So this is another major problem. Here's an ontology of Finnish historical places that we have created as well. Time ontologies, okay, time is represented, event ontologies, they are very important. Here you see, for example of the Yalta event that actually doesn't tell anything about the Second World War. So using this kind of information in a linked data model, you wouldn't find out that this event took place during the World War, and even if it was one of the most central things that happened. So we need, the point in this slide is that we need explicit references to the different events as well in the metadata, not only references to people like here or places. Here's a picture of Finnish history ontology, and here are some, model of, we can also use events for modeling the leather process, booth making process here. Here's the model in terms of events in RDF. And there are lots of these other terminologies that have to be represented, like diseases, drugs, trademarks, biological pieces, laws. For example, here are some biological ontologies that we have created with the National History Museum in Finland. Actually, all the main lists have been now translated into RDF and are on our servers. For example, the mammals of the world, 5,000 different ones, and birds, more than 10,000 different species. And it's a mess, actually. This is only one part of a false click beetle in Africa that just tells you that Linnaeus created some systematic things, but for example, in this case, starting from 1830, the question whether this Galba tuberculata is what it is has been researched by many researchers here during the years, and actually it turned out here that there's actually two pieces involved here that have their own path of development. So even simple things can be very complicated in terms of ontologies. Yeah, important thing of ontologies is that it's not only to publish the data, but publish them as services, and this is actually our key point here. We have this national ONCI ontology service, by which you can publish data and also connect the ontology service to your own cataloging system, so that everybody can in Finland basically use very easily our ontology service that's now maintained by the National Library of Finland. So we have already 40,000 human users per month and 400 different registers users like museum cataloging systems. There are two versions of it. There's ONCI Lite and version. But this is important, the most important thing, I think, that if you would like to make use of this ontology service, all you need to do in your own website is to write one line of JavaScript code, after which you can get this kind of widget in your system. And by using this widget, you can get the URIs automatically from the ontology service, so that everybody can really, in practice, share the ontologies that's now maintained in a central repository. So this is very important to have this kind of very simple tools by which people can use in their legacy systems for getting the URIs, the identifiers for different concepts, right? And it's now funded by Ministry of Education and Ministry of Finance, this system. So it's really a sort of deployed application of semantic web. I'm running out of time, dear. Well, the final thing that we are now working on is the Linkdata Finland publishing system, where the idea is that to provide a platform for everybody basically to publish the data as Linkdata. And after you put the data inside of this platform, all these services that you might may want to have on using the data are automatically generated. So Tim Berners-Lee created this 5-star model, and since we are not humble, we created 7-star model. Well, the idea is that a 6-star is given if you can provide your data with a schema that people can understand and reuse, so that people can understand the data and reuse it easily. And 7-star publication means that you also validate your data against the schema. I think these two points are very important when you really are using data from the reuse viewpoint. So this doesn't mean that our system is 7-star, but we encourage people. And we have at least one data set that's 7-star at the moment, at least with some question marks available. The idea here is simple. To put it in one picture again, we have this big data Finland service and lots of data sets there, and once you have uploaded your data there, then you can start using it in applications using standard APIs like this. So for example, this culture sample data set is here, and our culture sample, actually all these 790 different views are based on these APIs. And then book sample, which is by the Finnish public library, is a very large system. It has 60,000 users at the moment per month. They have this application, and they developed this application by themselves by just using the standard APIs that we provided to our data service here. And if you have another application, you could do it by yourself here. So this is very important that we separate the data into this RDF store, and then everybody could basically start using it like ourselves. Here, if you go to look at the site, you will find all kinds of explanations about it. And here are some examples of data sets that we have published there. We have the Finnish version of DBpedia, different cultural heritage sets, history sets, like the National Biography, World War I linked open data with Colorado University, Finnish law as linked data. Linked open universities, we also publish our own university data as linked open data. Linked science, bird observations, millions of bird observations, and weather data combined together so that we can investigate them. And lots of ontologies as well. Ontologies are also data, and we can use the same platform actually also for ontologies, like authorities or places. And here's an example of how it looks. This is a Finnish law as linked data. If you go there, this page is automatically created so that you can use it. And there's automatic documentation function. This is an Italian system that we use there. We steal everything we can, as is practice in semantic community. So you get automatically documentation if you have the schema here. And then we've created our own system, VocaP, that analyzes how your vocabularies are used in your data. You can get this free. And what you basically get there is a kind of a long report on different aspects of your data. And we have statistics tools so that you can analyze your data, what kind of properties are used there, and so on. So in conclusion, Imaro Kant has said sometime that we learn from history, that we learn nothing from history. I don't know if you share this opinion with this community. But anyway, what have we learned from you? I tried to sort of summarize the lessons learned. So this is the first one. Open your data so that it links with the other's data. So I think in the future and even now, we have to think not only ourselves, but also the other guys in the community so that they could reuse our data more easily, because if they can use the data more easily, then probably also we can use their data more easily in our application. Everybody's data is enriched for free by this way. Redundant work is minimized by collaboration. We don't have to review the same data as our friends have already done. Work can be shared in better ways. Again, we can share the work so that the real experts on real data can do the work, and so that not everybody is doing everything, which is not a good idea. For example, in the ontologies, we found out that something like more than half of the concepts in these special ontologies are actually already there in the general ontology. So half of the work that they have invested there have been, in a way, wasted time. And data can be reused in different applications. This is the final. Perhaps most important thing there. Then the other thing that we have learned is that if you use shared infrastructure, you can prevent data leaking problem, as Einstein put it. So focus on data production, and that's why we started in the very beginning to involve the museums and libraries in the process so that we could really get our hands on the original place where the data is produced, because if the data is produced there in a harmonious and well way, a good ways, then it's very easy to make the applications later on. Most of our time is wasted in aligning the data and correcting which could have been done as cheaply or even cheaper in the first place, right? If we only had knew how to do it. Thank you. If you have any questions, I...